In the 1960s, Cesar Chavez, one of the founders of the United Farm Workers, UFW, Union, vehemently opposed illegal immigration, arguing it undermined his efforts to unionize farm workers and improve working conditions and wages for American citizen workers. The UFW even reported illegal immigrants to the Immigration and Naturalization Service. In 1969, Chavez led a march, accompanied by Ralph Abernathy, president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and Senator Walter Mondale, along the border with Mexico, protesting the farmers' use of illegal immigrants. But most unions soon changed course, and today they lobby to confer amnesty and ultimately citizenship on illegal aliens. These include American Federation of Labor Congress of Industrial Organizations, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Farm Labor Organizing Committee, Hotel Employees and Restaurant Employees International Union, Laborers International Union of North America, Service Employees International Union, Union of Needle Trades, Industrial and Textile Employees, United Farm Workers, and United Food and Commercial Workers. The unions view the large influx of both legal and illegal immigrants as a new source of political clout that favors their allies in the Democratic Party and potentially adds membership to their own dwindling numbers. They came to the same realization as historian Samuel Lovell, who noted that the voting-age children of the first Great Migration constituted the big city masses who furnished the votes which re-elected Franklin Roosevelt again and again, and in the process, ended the traditional Republican majority in this country. And there can be no doubt, as a practical matter, that the statists' benefits for votes promises is an attractive, albeit destructive, enticement. Despite President George W. Bush's and Senator John McCain's long record of advocacy for more legal immigration and amnesty for illegal aliens, it was not enough to compete with the statists' agenda. In 2004, 44% of Hispanics, for example, voted for Bush for president, and 53% voted for John Kerry. In 2008, 31% of Hispanics voted for McCain for president, and 67% voted for Barack Obama. The statist tolerates the illegal aliens' violations of working, wage, and environmental standards because the aliens' babies born in America are, under the current interpretation of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, treated as United States citizens. And under the Hart-Celler Act, upon turning 21 years of age, the child can sponsor additional family members for citizenship. From the statist's perspective, the pool of future administrative state constituents and sympathetic voters is potentially bottomless. But does the 14th Amendment grant automatic citizenship to the children of illegal aliens? The relevant part of the amendment reads that all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. This language requires more than birth within the United States. The amendment's purpose was to grant citizenship to the emancipated slaves who were born in the United States and owed sole allegiance to it. Native Americans, who were also subject to tribal jurisdiction, were excluded from citizenship. There is no legislative history supporting the absurd proposition that the 14th Amendment was intended to empower illegal alien parents to confer American citizenship on their own babies merely as a result of their birth in the United States. Foreign visitors and diplomats are not subject to American jurisdiction. Illegal aliens are subject to the jurisdiction of their home country, as are their children, whether they are born in their home country or the United States. The combination of intended and unintended consequences and legal and illegal immigration is transforming American society. Using the U.S. Census Bureau's data collected in March 2007, the Center for Immigration Studies reported in part, the nation's immigrant population, legal and illegal, reached a record of 37.9 million in 2007. Immigrants account for 1 in 8 U.S. residents, the highest level in 80 years. In 1970, it was 1 in 21. In 1980, it was 1 in 16. And in 1990, it was 1 in 13. Overall, nearly 1 in 3 immigrants is an illegal alien. Half of Mexican and Central American immigrants and 1/3 of South American immigrants are illegal. Of adult immigrants, 31% have not completed high school, compared to 8% of natives. Since 2000, immigration increased the number of workers without a high school diploma by 14%, and all other workers by 3%. The proportion of immigrant-headed households using at least one major welfare program is 33%, compared to 19% for native households. The poverty rate for immigrants and their U.S.-born children, under 18, is 17%, nearly 50% higher than the rate for natives and their children. 34% of immigrants lack health insurance, compared to 13% of natives. Immigrants and their U.S.-born children account for 71% of the increase in the uninsured since 1989. Immigration accounts for virtually all of the national increase in public school enrollment over the last two decades. In 2007, there were 10.8 million school-age children from immigrant families in the United States. The Pew Hispanic Center estimates that 9% of the population of Mexico was living in the United States in 2004. 57% of all illegal immigrants are Mexican. Another 24% are from other Latin American countries. 55% of all Mexicans in the United States are here illegally. By 2050, Hispanics will be between 29% and 32% of the nation's population. Washington Post columnist Robert J. Samuelson analyzed the Census Bureau's annual statistical report on poverty and household income for 2006 and found, among other things, that there were 36.5 million people in poverty. That's the figure that translates into the 12.3% poverty rate. In 1990, the population was smaller, and there were 33.6 million people in poverty, a rate of 13.5%. The increase from 1990 to 2006 was 2.9 million people, 36.5 million minus 33.6 million. Hispanics accounted for all of the gain. Samuelson explained that from 1990 to 2006, the number of poor Hispanics increased 3.2 million from 6 million to 9.2 million. Meanwhile, the number of non-Hispanic whites in poverty fell from 16.6 million, poverty rate 8.8% in 1990, to 16 million, 8.2% in 2006. Among blacks, there was a decline from 9.8 million in 1990, poverty rate 31.9%, to 9 million, 24.3% in 2006. White and black poverty has risen somewhat since 2000, but is down over longer periods. He added, "Only an act of willful denial can separate immigration and poverty. The increase among Hispanics must be concentrated among immigrants, legal and illegal, as well as their American-born children. Yet this story goes largely untold." The Manhattan Institute's Heather McDonald points to another problem with the mass Hispanic migration to the United States: the fertility surge among unwed Hispanic women, particularly teenage girls. Hispanic women have the highest unmarried birth rate in the country, over 3 times that of whites and Asians, and nearly 1.5 times that of black women. Moreover, the rate of childbirth for Mexican teenagers, who come from by far the largest and fastest growing immigration population, greatly outstrips every other group. Education is another problem, as immigrants bring different cultural attitudes, and their sheer numbers overwhelm many school systems. In Mexico, a child is legally required to attend school up through the 8th grade. In part, this is why 32% of all illegal immigrants and 15% of legal immigrants have not completed the 9th grade. Only 2% of natives of the United States have not. Nearly 31% of adult immigrants do not have a high school diploma. 8% of United States natives do not. Local public school systems are struggling with the consequences of the federal government's policies. According to the Pew Hispanic Center, one out of every five students in 2006 was Hispanic. Between 1990 and 2006, Hispanic students accounted for nearly 60% of the total increase in students attending public schools. And by 2050, Pew predicts that the Hispanic school-aged population will increase by 166%. Hispanic children are expected to make up the majority of public school students by 2050. The enormity of migration to the United States also discourages the use of English and encourages the establishment of ethnic enclaves. The 2007 Census Bureau's American Community Survey found that more than 55 million individuals in the United States speak a language other than English at home. Of these people, more than 34 million speak Spanish at home. More than 16 million of the Spanish-speaking individuals speak English less than very well. Furthermore, in 2000, 43% of Hispanics lived in neighborhoods with Hispanic majorities, up from 39% in 1990. Of course, the administrative state has prospered hugely from the immigration anarchy the statist has unleashed. The Heritage Foundation's Robert Rector writes that, historically, Hispanics in America have had very high levels of welfare use. In recent years, Hispanics were almost three times more likely to receive welfare than non-Hispanic whites. Putting together the greater probability of receiving welfare with the greater cost of welfare per family means that, on average, Hispanic families received four times more welfare per family than white non-Hispanics. Welfare use can also be measured by immigration status. In general, immigrant households are about 50% more likely to use welfare than native-born households. Immigrants with less education are more likely to use welfare. In 2008, a Manhattan Institute study, measuring immigrant assimilation in the United States, found that the current level of assimilation of all recent immigrant groups is lower than at any time during the first Great Migration early in the 20th century. While some ethnic groups assimilated better than others, and for different reasons, Mexicans were the least assimilated overall and were assimilating at the slowest rate. Even those Mexicans who came to the United States as children, aged 5 and younger, show discouraging trends. They are more likely than other ethnic immigrant groups to be teen mothers or incarcerated. Mexican adolescents are imprisoned at rates approximately 80% greater than immigrant adolescents generally. Unlike past waves of migration to the United States, which had identifiable beginnings and ends, the current influx is not a wave, but an ongoing tsunami that began more than 40 years ago, and apart from temporary slowdowns resulting mostly from a cooling American economy and haphazard enforcement of immigration laws, is likely to continue in the decades ahead. The citizenry was assured that the 1965 Act would not produce what it in fact has now produced. Yet there is no serious effort to repeal chain migration or even call a temporary halt to it. The statist does not allow the nation time to try to absorb the aliens who are already here before encouraging more to follow. Federal and state laws and policies that grant de facto citizenship to illegal aliens, the lax enforcement of employer sanctions and the granting of driver's licenses, in-state college tuition, hospital care, mortgages, and public education send a signal to aliens around the world that America is not serious about immigration enforcement. And when numerous cities and towns designate themselves sanctuary cities and order their employees and local law enforcement officers not to cooperate with federal immigration authorities, the rule of law is flouted by public officials and illegal aliens alike. America has never experienced or tolerated anything like this. Moreover, rather than Americanize aliens and use public and private institutions to inculcate them with the virtues of American culture, language, mores, history, traditions, and customs, the statist is cultivating a cultural relativism in which the cultures from which the aliens fled are given equal accord with the American culture. But all cultures are not equal, as evidenced in part by the alien fleeing his own country for the American culture and the American citizens staying put. It is normal and healthy for ethnic groups to celebrate their diverse heritages, Columbus Day, St. Patrick's Day, etc., and they have since the nation's founding. Most large cities have a Chinatown, Little Italy, and Germantown. In many of these ethnic neighborhoods, the old language is still spoken, especially among the older generations. But neither the heritage nor home language of the individual has ever competed with the American culture for dominance. The history of immigration in the United States up to now has been of assimilation. In his 1796 farewell address to the nation, George Washington explained it this way: "Citizens, either by birth or choice, of a common country, that country has the right to concentrate your affections. The name of American, which belongs to you in your national capacity, must always exalt the just pride of patriotism, more than any appellation derived from local discriminations." For more than two centuries, individuals with diverse backgrounds have come together to form a national melting pot and harmonious society sustained by allegiance to the country and its founding principles. But today's open-ended mass migration, coupled with the destructive influences of biculturalism, multiculturalism, bilingualism, multilingualism, dual citizenship, and affirmative action, have combined to form the building blocks of a different kind of society, where aliens are taught to hold tightly to their former cultures and languages. Balkanization grows, antagonism and conflict are aroused, and victimhood is claimed at perceived slights. If a nation does not show and teach respect for its own identity, principles, and institutions, that corrosive attitude is conveyed to the rest of the world, including newly arriving aliens. And if this is unchecked, the nation will ultimately cease to exist. Dr. Samuel P. Huntington, who served as chairman of Harvard's Government Department and its Academy for International and Area Studies, observed that the persistent inflow of Hispanic immigrants threatens to divide the United States into two peoples, two cultures, and two languages. The United States ignores this challenge at its peril. He argued that Mexican immigration differs from past immigration and most other contemporary immigration due to a combination of six factors: contiguity, scale, illegality, regional concentration in the Southwest, persistence, and historical presence. The consequences, he believed, are stark. Demographically, socially, and culturally, the Reconquista, or reconquest, of the Southwest United States by Mexican immigrants is well underway. The United States is already a bilingual nation. Government at all levels and a growing list of private concerns do business in both English and Spanish. And Spanish is the predominant language in communities throughout the country. This is a destructive condition. St. Augustine observed, "When men cannot communicate their thoughts to each other simply because of difference of language, all the similarity of their common human nature is of no avail to unite them in fellowship." Alexis de Tocqueville made the same point. Language is perhaps the strongest perhaps most enduring link which unites men. How can the alien participate fully in American society if he does not share the language that binds citizen to citizen? How can he acquire better skills, pursue higher learning, or interact effectively in the marketplace if he does not speak English? How can he assess the benefit of entering into contracts or other legal arrangements if he cannot understand the terms and conditions to which he commits himself? And most important, how can the alien comprehend the nation's founding principles and pledge allegiance to them if he cannot be sure of their intended meaning? Clearly, neither the alien nor the civil society is the better. Yet proponents of unrestricted immigration vilify those who attempt to promote a common language. Raúl Zaguirre, who for 30 years was president and CEO of the group National Council of La Raza, reportedly said that U.S. English is to Hispanics as the Ku Klux Klan is to blacks. Funded in part by the Ford Foundation and numerous other corporate and non-profit contributions, La Raza, meaning the race in English, works tirelessly against the assimilation of legal Hispanic aliens into American society and for the continuation of illegal Hispanic migration into the country. Writing in Front Page magazine, John Perazzo disclosed that La Raza views the United States as an irredeemably racist nation, favors racial and ethnic preferences for minorities in the workplace and in higher education, supports open borders and amnesty for all illegal aliens, supports the DREAM Act, which is designed to allow illegal aliens to attend college at the reduced tuition rates normally reserved for in-state legal residents, advocates reform that would give illegal aliens full access to taxpayer-funded health care services, characterizes any reduction in government assistance to illegal border crossers as a disgrace to American values, supports access to driver's licenses for illegal aliens, supports voting rights for illegal aliens, opposes the Aviation Transportation and Security Act, requiring that all airport baggage screeners be U.S. citizens, opposes the Clear Law Enforcement for Criminal Alien Removal Act, which would empower state and local police to enforce federal immigration laws, opposes the Real ID Act, which requires that all driver's license and photo ID applicants be able to verify they are legal residents of the United States, and that the documents they present to prove their identity are genuine. Despite this radical agenda, which has been consistently rejected by American voters, leaders of this movement are welcomed at the highest levels of power. Hillary Clinton appointed Zaguirre as co-chair of her presidential campaign and assigned him to lead her outreach to Hispanics. McCain was honored by his group in 1999. President Obama appointed Cecilia Munoz, a senior vice president of La Raza, as director of his Office of Intergovernmental Affairs. There are a multitude of such groups and individuals welcome at the highest levels of the government, where they exert influence on public policy decisions. McCain also appointed an individual to the top ranks of his presidential campaign, Juan Hernandez, who was born in America but holds dual citizenship with Mexico, as his Hispanic outreach director. Hernandez once held the same position for Mexico's former president, Vicente Fox. In 2001, Hernandez, speaking of Mexican Americans, said that, "I want the third generation, the seventh generation. I want them all to think Mexico first." The U.S. Chamber of Commerce and other business interests in the United States are economic enablers for this mentality. It is hard to believe that the Chamber uses its considerable clout with Congress to urge the importation of even more low-skilled and unskilled laborers. After all, who else will cut lawns, wash dishes, and pick lettuce? Of course, Americans will, if the price is right. The Hoover Institution's Thomas Sowell writes, virtually any job is a job that Americans will not take if the pay is low enough. Nor is there any reason for pay to rise if illegal immigrants are available at low pay. Center for Immigration Studies Executive Director Mark Krikorian adds, "If the supply of foreign workers were to dry up, employers would respond to this new, tighter labor market in two ways. One, they would offer higher wages, increased benefits, and improved working conditions, so as to recruit and retain people from the remaining pool of workers. At the same time, the same employers would look for ways to eliminate some of the jobs they are now having trouble filling. The result would be a new equilibrium, with blue-collar workers making somewhat better money, but each one of those workers being more productive." He adds, "By holding down natural wage growth in labor-intensive industries, immigration serves as a subsidy for low-wage, low-productivity ways of doing business, retarding technological progress and productivity growth." American immigration policy also has the perverse effect of upholding the dysfunctional status quo in Mexico. Johns Hopkins University professor Steve H. Hanke argues that Mexico's labor policies mirror those of communist Yugoslavia under Marshal Tito. Rather than modernize the economy, Mexico's politicos have embraced a Tito-inspired strategy. When incapable of fostering productive jobs, export the labor force. As a result, over 27% of Mexico's labor force was working in the U.S. in 2006, and these workers are sending home $20 billion in remittances. That equals one-third of the total wage earnings in the formal sector of the Mexican economy, and 10% of Mexico's exports. The law of supply and demand through the importation of low-skilled and unskilled labor has had exactly the consequences Cesar Chavez originally feared. Namely, it reduces the availability of entry-level or low-skilled jobs for Americans and drives down wages for unskilled American workers who find jobs. Harvard University professor George J. Borjas found that, by increasing the supply of labor between 1980 and 2000, immigration reduced the average annual earnings of native-born men by an estimated $1,700, or roughly 4%. In addition, the negative effect on native-born black and Hispanic workers is significantly larger than on whites, because a much larger share of minorities are in direct competition with immigrants. The American thinkers Lee Carey wondered what demand might exist for unskilled labor in the future. He looked at U.S. Department of Labor statistics and concluded it was not very promising. From 2006 to 2016, the portion of Hispanics in the labor force is projected to grow from 13.7% to 16.4%. Meanwhile, the vocational supersectors expected to experience the greatest growth, education and health services, and professional and business services, will generally require, at a minimum, a high school education. Supersectors where unskilled Hispanics experience the highest level of employment today, construction and agriculture, are expected to grow a modest 10.6% and decline 2.8%, respectively. In a modern economy with growing emphasis on education and higher skills, the surplus of unskilled foreign labor will further strain and expand social services while keeping wages low for those who find entry-level and low-skill jobs. Although certain businesses related to agriculture, hotel and restaurant services, lawn services, and construction may benefit from an endless supply of poor and unskilled foreign labor willing to work below the minimum wage and without the panoply of benefits employers are compelled to provide for legal employees, the rest of society is forced to subsidize these businesses by paying for benefits the foreign laborers and their families receive through public education, health care, and a menu of welfare state offerings. For this reason, Milton Friedman declared, "It's just obvious you can't have free immigration and a welfare state." And again, The proportion of immigrant-headed households using at least one major welfare program is 33%. As Professor Borjas has said, being without work in the United States is still far better for most people than being employed in Central America.